We're basically watching a massive fundamental shift in the tech landscape happen right in front of
Oh,
us.
absolutely. It's happening in real time.
Yeah, and for you listening, I mean, for the past couple of years, the whole narrative around AI has been focused on it acting as, a highly advanced chatbot or like a really smart autocomplete.
Right, exactly.
You prompt it, it gives you an answer, and then it just sits there and waits for your next instruction. But that paradigm is already dying.
It really is.
AI is actively transitioning from a passive tool into an autonomous workforce. Like, we're moving from systems that just generate text to systems that actually take action. They make independent decisions.
They're orchestrating incredibly complex tasks without, any human hand-holding.
Yes. And to show you exactly how deep this goes, we're diving into a stack of fresh sources today, specifically the March 17th, 2026 edition of @Alnick News, Tech and AI Daily.
It's a packed edition, too.
Oh, it's dense. And our mission for this deep dive is to synthesize all these rapid-fire updates. We want to show you how the entire tech stack,
From the underlying silicon.
right, from the hardware and memory architectures all the way up to the human job market you operate in, how all of it is radically adapting to accommodate these autonomous agents.
Because it's a complete evolution of the software layer. We're stepping into the era of agentic AI.
Yeah.
The model isn't just a participant in your workflow anymore. It is executing the entire workflow itself. It's managing its own memory, correcting its own errors.
Okay, let's unpack this by starting right at the application layer. Like, what are these new AI systems actually doing today that's forcing the rest of the tech world to play catch up?
Well, the clearest example in the current updates is definitely Claude Code.
Right, I saw that.
Yeah, the latest release shows that Claude Code has developed the capability to build complete Godot games entirely from scratch.
Which is wild.
It is. And we were talking about it just generating a movement script or like a basic physics snippet that a human then has to manually copy and paste.
Right, it's managing the whole asset pipeline, the state machines, the collision logic. It's handling full application development.
Exactly.
It's basically like going from using a smart autocomplete tool to hiring a solo indie game developer. You put them in a room, they wrestle with the engine for a few hours, and then they just hand you a finished playable build.
That's a great way to put it. And, while Claude is tackling full game builds, Mistral just dropped their small form model family on Hugging Face.
Oh yeah, the Mistral drop.
Yeah, and the flagship there is the 119B2603 model.
Which is 119 billion parameters.
Right, with 6.5 billion active,
Yeah.
plus a 256K context window and multimodal capabilities, which is impressive on its own.
Yeah, definitely.
But the real breakthrough they released right alongside it is something called Leanstral.
Lean Anstral. Yeah, I saw that in the notes, and I know it's tied to the Lean 4 programming language, right?
Yes, exactly. What's fascinating here is that Leanstral is their first open source Lean 4 proof assistant.
Okay, so what does that actually mean in practice?
It makes it a proper code agent, built specifically for mathematical proofs and formal verification.
Wait, let me push back on that for a second.
Sure.
Because, I mean, formal verification is notoriously slow and brittle. Traditionally, mathematicians and engineers spend like months on a single proof just to verify that a piece of software has zero bugs.
Oh, absolutely. It's grueling.
Right. So if Leanstral is strictly using formal verification, doesn't that just slow the AI's inference speed to an absolute crawl? I mean, how is that viable for real-time coding agents?
That is the exact friction point the industry has been wrestling with, and it's why Leanstral is such a massive leap.
Okay, how so?
Well, historically, LLMs code probabilistically. They essentially guess the next most likely token based on their training data.
Right, which is fast, but it leads to hallucinations.
Exactly. Fast, but you get silent logic errors. Leanstral synthesizes the two paradigms. It uses the probabilistic intuition of the LLM to rapidly propose the complex mathematical proof.
Oh, I see.
But then it runs that proposal through the deterministic Lean 4 compiler.
Wow.
Yeah, so the AI isn't just guessing anymore. It is forcing its own output through a rigorous mathematical filter before it ever presents the code to the user.
So it's proving it mathematically.
It proves, with absolute mathematical certainty, that the logic holds.
That is incredible. So it's checking its own work at the compiler level, proving the software won't crash before a human ever even runs it.
Exactly.
But Okay, if software is now acting like an autonomous team of employees, like building entire games, mathematically verifying its own logic loops, then the traditional computer chips we've been relying on are going to be a problem.
Oh, they are already a massive bottleneck.
Right? Because those chips were built to just crunch raw numbers as fast as possible.
Yeah, and that naturally brings us to the physical layer. The silicon itself is undergoing this fundamental redesign just to support this agentic reality. The updates highlight NVIDIA's launch of the Vera CPU.
Yes, here's where it gets really interesting. Because when we look at traditional compute power, like those massive H100 or B200
The
GPUs,
powerhouses, yeah.
right, that's the muscle. That's a weightlifter crunching massive matrices of data. But when I was reading the specs on the Vera CPU, it sounds less like a weightlifter and more like a highly efficient middle manager.
That is spot on.
It's entirely built to handle orchestration, right?
Yes. If we connect this to the bigger picture,
Yeah.
you can see why the von Neumann architecture basically has to adapt. For years, the bottleneck in AI was strictly about FLOPS.
Floating point operations per second.
Right. How many calculations can the chip execute in a second? But as we deploy these autonomous agents, the bottleneck shifts entirely to context switching and memory states.
Ah, because they are constant like talking to each other.
Exactly. If you have, say, 50 AI agents working concurrently on different modules of that Godot game, traditional GPUs are terrible at rapidly passing those complex state changes back and forth.
They just aren't built for that kind of traffic control.
Right. The Vera CPU is specifically optimized to manage that multi-agent orchestration without dropping the ball. It reduces the latency of agents talking to other agents.
Which makes perfect sense physically, but that begs a massive software question.
Okay, what's that?
If NVIDIA is building the literal silicon to act as middle managers, how do the agents actually communicate logically on the software side? I mean, if I have a dozen autonomous AI agents working on a code base without a unified reality, isn't a swarm like that just going to create absolute
Oh,
chaos?
it would be a total disaster.
Right? They'd be overwriting each other's work instantly.
It would be a complete state management nightmare. You can't just dump all of their outputs into a standard vector database and expect them to somehow coordinate.
No, of course not.
That's why developers are building infrastructure like OpenViking, which just released.
I saw that. It's a context database, right?
Yes, designed specifically for AI agents like the open source OpenClaw models. And what's brilliant about OpenViking is that it manages this memory using a traditional file system paradigm.
I found that so ironic, honestly.
How so?
Well, we have these hyper-advanced neural networks, and to keep them organized, we essentially have to put them back into a POCX-like file system with like folders and drives.
I know it sounds super archaic, but it's exactly what an autonomous swarm needs.
Because of file locking.
Exactly. When multiple agents are operating, you need strict file locking mechanisms. If Agent A is rewriting the physics engine, Agent B needs to see that that file is locked, read the current state, and then move on to, say, the UI design.
Got it. So OpenViking provides that structured shared drive so the agents actually have a cohesive, synchronized memory of the whole project state.
It organizes the swarm.
And speaking of organizing swarms, the At-A-Remic News Dispatch also highlighted Mirrorfish, which apparently gained like 3,200 stars on GitHub in a single day.
Oh yeah, Mirrorfish exploded. It's fascinating because it's a universal swarm intelligence engine specifically built for predictions.
Okay, how does it work?
It provides a really simple Python interface.
Yeah.
It allows developers to just spin up a massive swarm of agents to collectively tackle a forecasting problem,
Yeah.
and then it aggregates their outputs into a highly accurate consensus.
Well, wait, if you have a swarm of, I don't know, 10,000 Mirrorfish agents all simultaneously querying a shared database like OpenViking,
Yeah.
the I/O bottleneck alone would crash a standard system. I mean, traditional computer RAM simply cannot handle that level of concurrent data mapping without a kernel panic.
You hit the nail on the head. And that physical limitation is exactly why the underlying engineering layer, we might call the builders underground, is currently undergoing a radical rewrite.
Because you literally can't run this stuff on normal architecture.
Exactly. To make these massive agent swarms economically and technically viable, the tools have to bypass traditional bottlenecks entirely, which leads us right to Graph Zero.
Man, I was reading the Graph Zero documentation, and it honestly sounded a bit reckless at first glance.
It really does sound crazy on paper.
Right. It's a new C++ engine for handling massive graph data sets, but it completely bypasses computer RAM. It memory maps directly for PyTorch. How are they doing that without crashing the entire system?
They're utilizing a highly optimized zero-copy memory mapping technique.
Okay, unpack that for me.
Well, traditionally, if you have a massive graph dataset which you need for these complex multi-agent relationships, the system has to load that data from the SSD into the system RAM and then pass it to the GPU.
Right, the RAM is the middleman.
And that middle step, the RAM, is your traffic jam. Graph Zero essentially builds a high-speed bypass lane. By memory mapping directly, PyTorch can fetch the exact pages of data it needs straight from the NVMe drives.
Wait, so it treats the storage drive as if it were the RAM?
Exactly. It strips out the middleman entirely, which dramatically reduces memory overhead.
So they are avoiding the traffic jam entirely. That's brilliant. And that level of optimization is critical because compute time is still wildly expensive.
Oh, astronomically expensive.
Which ties directly into another release mentioned in the sources, pre-flight for PyTorch.
Ah, yes.
It's a pre-training validator designed to catch silent failures.
Yes, specifically things like dead gradients and label leakage.
Let's drill into that because for you listening, a silent failure is arguably a machine learning engineer's absolute worst nightmare.
It absolutely is because it's a financial black hole.
Yeah.
Imagine you're training a new agentic model. You spin up a massive compute cluster, you start the run, and you just leave it for a week.
Hey, everything looks fine on the surface.
Right. The progress bars look great, the GPUs are at 100% utilization, and you are actively burning tens of thousands of dollars in cloud compute costs. But underneath, you have a dead gradient.
Meaning the weights have essentially zeroed out.
Exactly. The mathematical pathways the model uses to update its weights have just flatlined. Yeah. Usually because of like an activation function issue, like a dying ReLU.
So the model just stops learning completely.
It stops learning. But because it doesn't throw a syntax error, the system doesn't crash.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah. You only realize a week later that you just paid top dollar to train a model that learned absolutely nothing.
And label leakage is just as bad, right? That's when the training data accidentally includes the test data.
Right. So the model looks like it's an absolute genius during validation.
But it's really just cheating because it already saw the answers.
Precisely. So preflight for PyTorch acts as this diagnostic layer that mathematically checks the gradient flow and the dataset integrity before you initiate that massive run.
Catching it early.
Exactly. It stops developers from bleeding capital on doomed training runs.
Okay. So we have Claude and Mistral pushing autonomy at the app layer. We have NVIDIA's Vera CPU acting as the hardware middle manager. We have OpenViking giving swarms a shared file system, and tools like Graph Zero rewriting the laws of memory to make it all run efficiently.
It's a massive stack.
It is. So what does this all mean when we bring it back to the human element? Like, how are developers actually deploying these tools in the wild? Because looking at the open code controversy in the sources, it seems like there are some massive hidden traps right now.
The open code situation is a perfect case study in the growing pains of this agentic era.
Yeah, walk us through what happened there.
So open code provides a web user interface that developers use to interact with their local AI agents. But the community just discovered that this UI proxies all of its requests to app.opencode.ai by default.
Which means developers who thought they were running a secure, private, local instance were actually routing all their data outward.
Without even knowing it.
I see this all the time, and it's such a dangerous assumption in the current tech culture. People automatically equate open source and local with air-gapped privacy.
And this proves it simply isn't true.
Not at all.
This raises an important question about security architecture in this fast-moving space. When you elevate an AI from a simple chatbot to an autonomous agent, you are inherently giving it access to proprietary code bases, sensitive company files, internal APIs.
Basically, the keys to the kingdom.
Exactly. If developers aren't rigorously inspecting the network traffic of their open source tools, they could be leaking core intellectual property without even realizing it.
It really is a wild west out there right now.
It really is.
But at the same time, when developers harness these tools correctly, the outputs are just wildly creative. Like, I loved the F1 Predict project that was highlighted in the sources.
Oh, F1 Predict is a brilliant implementation of how machine learning is maturing right now.
Yeah, it's a project built to predict Formula One race strategies, right?
Yes. But what's cool is it doesn't just rely on a massive neural network to guess the outcome. It pairs deterministic physics with light GBM residual models.
I love this approach so much. Let's break down the mechanics of why pairing those two things works so incredibly well.
Sure. So in an F1 race, a massive portion of the event is governed by known deterministic physics,
Like gravity and friction.
Right. We know the exact downforce of the car, the friction coefficient of the tires, the track layout, the fuel degradation rate. You don't need a neural network to calculate that. Pure physics can tell you the optimal speed for a corner.
But the problem is, racing is messy.
Exactly. Racing is incredibly messy.
You have driver fatigue, a sudden gust of wind, tire temperature fluctuations from dirty air behind another car. Like, the physics model can't predict that chaos.
That is exactly what a residual is. It is the difference between what the deterministic physics model predicted and what actually happened on the track.
Oh, okay.
The Light GBM machine learning algorithms are trained exclusively on those residuals. They aren't trying to learn how a car works.
Because the physics engine already knows that.
Right. They are only trying to learn the messy, chaotic variables that the physics model missed. By stacking the ML on top of the physics, they achieve this incredibly high degree of predictive accuracy.
It's such a perfect metaphor for where we are right now in tech. AI isn't necessarily tossing out the old foundational rules of software or physics. It's stacking on top of them to handle the complex, messy variables.
That's a great way to look at it.
But, while we're predicting race cars for fun, these exact same agentic tools are fundamentally reshaping the actual human job market.
Oh, entirely.
Which brings us to the final piece of the Atmic News Dispatch, Andrej Karpathy's job market visualizer.
Yeah. Karpathy released this visualization tool to track the real-time trends in the U.S. tech job market.
Right.
And if you synthesize his data with everything we've just
It's
discussed,
like Claude acting as a solo dev, Leanstroll verifying its own math, Vera orchestrating swarms.
exactly. The duality of AI becomes glaringly obvious.
The demand curve is just shifting violently. I mean, when you have autonomous agents capable of doing the heavy lifting of writing boilerplate code, debugging, and managing asset pipelines, the traditional junior developer roles are just going to evaporate.
They are. The skills that companies were paying top dollar for just, 24 months ago are being automated directly into the infrastructure layer.
It's brutal, but it's true.
But Karpathy's visualizer also shows the creation of entirely new categories of work.
Right.
The demand for engineers who can orchestrate these swarms, who understand how to optimize memory mapping in Graph Zero, or who can design the architecture for a multi-agent file system like OpenViking, that demand is skyrocketing.
So, to quickly distill the journey we just took today, we are watching the real-time birth of a completely new agent-driven ecosystem. We have AI models capable of building full video games and mathematically proving their own code. We have silicon like the Vera CTU being designed specifically to act as the middle managers for those models.
You have software paradigms reverting to file systems just to give these swarms a shared reality.
Exactly. And tools like Graph Zero and Preflight rewriting the rules of memory and training validation to make the whole thing economically feasible.
It is a top-to-bottom rewrite of the tech stack,
Oh.
driven entirely by the need to support autonomous, asynchronous agents.
And for you listening, by understanding the deep mechanics of these shifts today, you are operating leaps and bounds ahead of the general public.
Oh, without a doubt.
Most people still fundamentally view AI as just a text generator that helps them draft emails, but you are watching the actual infrastructure of the next decade being laid down right now.
That's a huge advantage.
It really is. But I want to leave you with a provocative thought to mull over as you watch this space evolve. If AI models are now formally verifying their own complex math, if they're orchestrating their own multi-agent swarms using specialized hardware and managing their own context through specialized file systems, at what point do human developers stop writing code altogether?
A crazy thought.
Right. Do we eventually transition away from being programmers and instead become like virtual city planners, exclusively focused on designing the digital environments, the boundary conditions, and the complex economies where these autonomous agents live and work? If that software bicycle is now pedaling itself, steering itself, and building its own engine, your only job left might just be deciding what city it should drive to next.